The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you today?
Thank you.
Dr. Smith, today's topic is one that's very, very important and critical, and that is heart disease and stroke and their connections to tobacco use. As we know, heart disease is leading cause of premature death both nationally and certainly right here in Ulster County. Before we introduce our guests, would you like to review some statistics for our listeners on heart disease and stroke?
Sure. Well, as you just said, heart disease, cardiovascular disease, is the leading cause of death in Ulster County. Cancer is number two and stroke number three. And we unfortunately see over 500 deaths in Ulster County per year due to the consequences of cardiovascular disease. And as we know, the cardiovascular disease is very much linked to unhealthy behaviors, such as tobacco use and obesity. So, you know, in addition to looking at genetic factors and what have you, we really need to look at the behavioral risk factors for cardiovascular disease and try to effect a change in those problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're very fortunate in that regard to have with us two ladies from the American Heart Association. And we have Kristen Judd Horowitz, who's Executive Director of American Heart Association in the Hudson Valley in Westchester.
Good morning.
And Patricia Malios, who is Community Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association and the American Stroke Association. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Before we begin our discussion, can you give us an overview of the American Heart Association, how and why it came into being and what its mission is?
Yes, absolutely. The American Heart Association, we're actually in our 93rd year, and we were founded by cardiologists who had a passion for research and for the prevention of cardiovascular disease and stroke. And we are a national organization, of course, we're very well known, but even in this area, we have a rich history. In New York State, we have an abundant research portfolio, and in the Hudson Valley, we've had a great presence with strong volunteer support and strong advocacy across the region.
In visiting your website prior in preparing for the show, it highlighted the importance of eating right and being active, along with getting enough sleep, practicing mindfulness, which is very interesting, managing stress, keeping mind and body fit, and connecting socially. It sounds very much like a holistic approach to wellness, and something that we kind of parallel in the public health world with community health. Can you elaborate on the components of that and why they're important in the big picture?
Absolutely. The Heart Association, because we have a very well-known brand, we really try and speak with a trustworthy voice on this subject, because we find that there's a lot of noise, particularly in new trends, new fads that come along. And we know that if we can really distill it down, not just to things that are, you know, simple and science proven, which of course they are, but actionable. We have something called Life Simple 7, which is available on our website if you go to My Life Check. It will give you a self-test that lets you look in on your behaviors, the number of fruits and vegetables you're eating, the amount of time you spend moving, knowing your numbers, things that anyone, no matter where they're starting on the health spectrum, if they're pretty healthy or maybe really have some concerns, can see what they're doing, find actionable ways to make a few small changes, and then find that they're a little better off. And I think that's something that we really understand, that it's not just a matter of making a healthy change today, make something that's something you can stick with and something that next year maybe you can take on another little change in your life. And especially, I think we have a responsibility to make generational change, to do things that will leave our kids and grandkids making different choices, just like our parents and grandparents made different choices than we sometimes do.
You know, we always encourage people in our public health education efforts to make small steps, because very often people will think of getting healthy as, you know, a metaphor for climbing Mount Everest. Oh my gosh, how am I ever going to do that? And it really, literally, you know, it may sound cliche-ish, but it really starts one step at a time. And it sounds very much like your approach.
It's very true. Perfect example. In this area, we are so blessed to have fantastic outdoor spaces. It is getting a little colder, but, if properly motivated, we can get out and enjoy some of that. And, of course, great access to local produce. And so just adding a little more color to your diet, stopping some of the prepackaged high sodium choices in favor of a fresh or a fresh frozen option for vegetables, just for example. Moving 150 minutes a week. It seems like a lot, but if you have a desk job and you get up and walk around for 10 minutes a couple of times a day, you can knock off 100 of those minutes just by getting out, chatting. We do a lot of walking meetings at the Heart Association. We pretend we're on the West Wing all the time, and we're just walking and talking.
Earth-critical things.
Exactly. Well, you know, we are changing the world, so we do take that stuff pretty seriously. But it's really a matter of finding those opportunities, you're absolutely right, to make a little change, and they add up.
And when you talked before about knowing your numbers, what is that about? What are they?
Well, of course, the biggest one is blood pressure, cholesterol, blood glucose, BMI, body mass index. Really, those are the place that you would want to start. And if you were to take that self-evaluation test that I spoke on my life check, it would ask you about those things. If you don't know them, though, off the top of your head, it's okay. You can still answer the other questions and get kind of an overview of where you're at and come back to it sometime when you have the numbers. But those are the things that really, in an annual physical, you would want to keep an eye on, and not just see where you are, but what your trend is.
And I noticed one of the things that you talked about was if you have a desk job to get up and move. We know that the National Institutes of Health said that even if you work out 3 times a week, if you have a desk job, you're at risk, and that sedentary lifestyle is really very dangerous to one's health. And getting up and walking, taking the stairs if you can, or taking your breaks by walking. You'll see us at the health department. You'll see me constantly going up and down the stairs and around the building. Maybe people think I'm crazy, but it's so critical.
It is. And, you know, sometimes the best parking spot is actually the worst parking spot. So as the holiday traffic ramps up and you are relegated to the very last row from Target, then maybe it's actually a good thing.
And as Dr. Smith mentioned, heart disease is the leading cause of premature death in the nation and right here in Ulster County. But what is the relationship, if you will, between tobacco use and heart disease? Because that's really the area that we're really hyper-focused on.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's one that is not always recognized. I think people frequently make the connection between cancers, certain cancers, and smoking. But honestly, smoking is every bit as destructive to your cardiovascular system. It damages the arteries. It builds up on the arteries so that they are more likely to form, have clots formed. They are less able to continue to function. And so a heart attack or a stroke could result from that. It also lowers the HDL, the happy. That's how I always tell people to remember, which is the cholesterol that I want? The HDL is the happy cholesterol. And smoking lowers that and raises the heart rate, and it replaces the oxygen in your blood with carbon monoxide. So pretty much every bad thing you can do to your body, smoking does.
And what activities and programs does American Heart engage in specifically to help prevent tobacco use and maybe help people quit if they are addicted?
Well, I think we can talk a little bit about our advocacy efforts, although I will put in a plug for our Jump Rope and Hoops for Heart programs, which of course many of our children have been involved in from an early age in the schools. They have an educational component that is really about getting those healthy principles established in a fun and accessible way for the kids. So that's one of, I think, probably our leading edge of getting that messaging out to children before they're even, maybe even really realizing that they're learning it. But really, advocacy is our strongest arm to controlling access to tobacco in society. So you want to take that one?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to share some information. So like Kristen said, advocacy is a big part of our work at the American Heart Association. And what we mean by that is really getting our message out to lawmakers at the local, state, and federal levels to let them know what issues are important to us, what affects heart diseases and stroke, and you know what they can do as those with power to help us make some healthy changes in our communities. So, you know, one, I hate to call it easy, but, you know, we hope it's an easy way for them to make changes to pass policies that would address some of this tobacco use. So that includes increasing the price of tobacco products, increasing the areas where we're not allowed to smoke, so strengthening smoke-free workplace laws, and increasing the legal sales age to purchase tobacco products. So those are kind of three of the major tobacco-related issues that we really not only advocate for as, you know, staff members, but really try to empower our volunteers who are, you know, honestly the strongest voice in our organization to hopefully get some of these policies passed.
As you may know, Ulster County was at the forefront of a couple of really great prevention initiatives. One was to prohibit smoking on all county property, mm-hmm. and then we extended that further to work with all the local municipalities to prohibit smoking on all parks, playgrounds, and recreation areas, and then also banning e-cigarettes first before from being used indoors. And then we also had a very unique law which prohibits any new tobacco license being issued within 1,000 feet of all K-12 schools in Ulster County, because tobacco marketing to kids is a very powerful and very robust thing, and really our kids need protection from that. So that was really critical. And Dr. Smith, would you like to say anything about
sure.
that?
Well, also the county executive is in support of raising the legal smoking age to 21. And we're very much in support of that for many reasons, one of which is that critical age from 18 to 21 is still a time in a person's life when they are highly susceptible to addiction. And of course, the basis for smoking addiction is nicotine, which is found in e-cigarettes and certainly in tobacco smoke. So if we can delay the onset of the smoking habit, as it were, or addiction until 21, we're very much ahead of the game, because fewer people would be likely to become lifetime smokers, addicted smokers. And, you know, so we think that that's going to be a very effective policy if, in fact, we can get that legislation passed in Ulster County.
Well, let's elaborate on that. And as you can hear from my phone, which is supposed to be silenced, that was a time for a break. And we'll be back after these short words, and we'll talk more about raising the age of tobacco purchase and other interesting topics. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
When it comes to surgery, you always want to be in the best surgical hands. Now, thanks to WMC Health Physicians at Lake Katrine, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, it's easy to find an expert surgeon close to home, featuring 8 highly respected doctors in 6 unique areas of practice. WMC Health Physicians at Lake Katrine is the latest way we're advancing care here in the Hudson Valley. The surgeons at WMC Health Physicians are leaders in the fields of breast surgery, general surgery, neurosurgery, surgical oncology, thoracic surgery, and vascular surgery, all equipped with the latest technology and approaches for the best possible care. And because they're part of WMC Health, your surgery can be performed at a location most convenient for you. Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital in Poughkeepsie or Health Alliance Hospitals in Kingston. Another way, we're advancing care here. For more information, visit wmchealth.org/Lake Katrine.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guests today are Kristen Judd Horowitz and Patricia Malios, both from the American Heart Association. We were talking about the different kinds of behaviors that contribute to cardiovascular disease, but there's also one statistic that I think is very important to recognize, and sometimes it's under-recognized or underdiagnosed in women, is that heart disease is the leading cause of death in women. Would you like to talk a little bit more about the American Heart Association's focus on preventing heart disease in women?
Yes, thank you. And it's true. And particularly, even this smoking angle on that, we found that female smokers on average will have a heart attack 14.4 years earlier than female non-smokers. But it is, regardless of smoking or non-smoking, the number one cause of death for women. And most people do not realize that still. Our Go Red for Women movement is entirely focused around that, around the healthy image of what it is to actually be a healthy woman. I think we get some mixed messages about that and about healthy lifestyle and really about sharing that message. You know, one of our big presses lately has been, don't just do it for yourself, but tell a friend, tell a colleague, make a sister or a friend your partner in health so that we can double and even triple our impact with this message. It's very important.
It's really important to have that support network mm-hmm. when you're trying to improve your health and your family's health. In terms of other community organizations or associations that you may partner with, who are they and who do you typically interact with in your advocacy efforts and in your outreach efforts?
So I think from the advocacy side of things, we definitely do try and partner with some of our national, like, sister and brother organizations, so the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Lung Association, because really, you know, trying to, especially when it comes to sometimes controversial issues like preventing tobacco use, we really want to have a united front and come together, you know, in a strong way. But then obviously, we want to have that local presence, and Kristen and her work, you know, they do a great job in really, you know, bringing both local community members and local community organizations into the fold and becoming our partners in this fight, because it's, you know, it's sadly a fight for all of us. It affects everyone, no matter your age, your race, your income, your gender. So really, you know, really wanting to bring in as many folks as possible to help this fight.
Again, we know that it's much, much more difficult to get addicted smokers to stop smoking than it is to prevent children and young adults to initiate smoking in the first place. Do you work specifically with children or young adults or their parents in some of these efforts?
Yes, we do try and get really people of all ages involved in these efforts. We have some programming, including Jump Rope for Heart, which is a fundraising initiative that we do through the elementary school. So we encourage children to literally jump rope and then help raise funds for the Heart Association. But really the most important part of that program is educating them on our various issues. And we have components that talk about healthy eating, being active, not using any sort of tobacco products as they age. So really trying to instill that information in their brains at a very young age. And then hopefully they would also, you know, bring that info to their parents, to their friends. And then as they age, that information would kind of continue to be instilled in their minds when they get involved in our other programming, including advocacy, which we obviously encourage all people to get involved with.
Mm-hmm. And I think really one of the most compelling arguments that I have heard on the Tobacco 21 legislation is not just those people between the ages of 18 and 21 who are not smoking, but if you think of who you know when you're 18 versus who you know when you're 21, 18-year-olds are in school, they have access to 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds who would then be, you know, bumming a cigarette from the 18-year-old friend. So to really cut that pipeline is making a much bigger impact than I think the surface, those numbers of 18 to 21, which, you know, one could kind of roll into sort of general category of not quite adulthood versus adulthood. But those younger teens are really impacted by this legislation. And I think it's a big difference.
I know some of the criticisms that we've researched and heard regarding raising the age of purchase to 21 have to do with military folks. And, you know, why should you be able to enlist in the military but not purchase cigarettes? And then the other is that, you know, you're taking away the rights of adults to choose to smoke. And it seems to me that it's not so much about taking away rights and more about protecting and preventing suffering and disease. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Exactly. That's the line of thinking that we take as well. So, you know, on the surface, it does seem like a valid argument. You know, if they can fight for our country, why can't they, you know, smoke a cigarette if they'd like to? But there was actually in August of 2014, the Department of Defense released a statement condemning the use of tobacco products among the military. And there's a quote here that basically says that, you know, they want their members of the military to be healthy. You know, so they want them to be healthy. B, members of the military, just like anyone else, have, you know, a higher chance of cardiovascular diseases and stroke if they smoke. And, you know, it's a public health issue for them as it is for the general public. So they're also concerned for their members, and they would like to see them healthy because obviously they have a very important job job to do.
And a readiness one, right?
I mean, yes, definitely.
And not to mention the costs of healthcare, mm-hmm. both while they're enlisted and then after when they become veterans. There's an additional burden there. You know, one of the criticisms we also heard from when we presented to the legislative committee to say, you know, was that, well, these are not kids between 18 and 21. And I didn't say it at the time because you know how you think about what you should have said. But when I was thinking about it on the way home, I thought to myself, yes, maybe they're not kids, but they are young adults who are not yet addicted to smoking. And that once they cross that threshold to become addicted smokers, it's so difficult to get them to quit. I mean, our cessation efforts are marginally successful at best because of that.
It is. And there's actually, not to keep throwing statistics out there, but this one really stuck in my mind. So according to the Institute of Medicine, it found that tobacco use were decreased by 12% by the time today's teenagers were adults if sales were increased to 21. And if a young person didn't start smoking, if they hit 18, didn't start smoking, only 2% of current smokers start between 18 to 21. So kind of to your point, you know, if they kind of hit that age and they're becoming adults, there is a stronger chance that they won't become smokers. But if they do smoke, you know, prior to that age, obviously it's much more difficult to quit the habit.
And there's some great research out there, and you probably are familiar with it, about decision-making ability, long-term decisions made, even in that critical age between 18 and 21. They don't necessarily have, I mean, I remember being 19, I thought I had a plan, but they don't necessarily have the brain formation, literally, to make a decision that they know is going to have a long-term repercussion. I think that's been a lot of the wisdom behind the drinking age, and I think it's a similar situation here. They're living in the moment and not realizing that they're signing on for a lifetime of addiction and disease and, you know, poor outcomes. So I think it's a very responsible thing to do to delay that decision until they are, you know, they have mentally formed the capacity to make a decision that will stick with them that long.
And before they become addicted, because it's not something that's easily dropped once you initiate.
Correct.
And at that age, you know, I mean, a friend of mine at the health department has a sign in her office that says, hire a teenager while they still know everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's great.
So we know that you do a lot of really great work in the area and that you have a lot of great events. Would you like to tell us a little bit about some upcoming events and then also where people can go for more information on this topic and others that you're engaged in?
Absolutely. And certainly we are always interested in getting involved in the community. We are very fortunate to have a great base of corporate support. We work with a lot of the major employers. We found that in addition to advocacy, the strength is in our numbers. So we want to work with employers to bring worksite health programs, which have, you know, no cost associated with them, but it's our way to bring the work and the messaging and the science of the Heart Association to the greatest number of people. Of course, we do have our Go Red for Women Luncheon. The Duchess Ulster event was actually just a couple of weeks ago, and that was a tremendous success, and we are always looking for people who want to get involved in that Go Red movement. It's a one-day luncheon, but it's a year-round movement, and then our Healthy for Good Heart Walks, Duchess and Ulster, will be coming up in March and April, respectively. Still looking for that Ulster location and date. So stay tuned for that one. Maybe you can have us back on when we have that one figured out. But we have been really very fortunate to have a tremendous turnout for those events. And we know that it's just one day, again, where we celebrate a healthy lifestyle, but we want people to be thinking about it year-round. National Wear Red Day, first Friday in February. So we have always had a very good showing from the county. The county building was lit up red last year, and that's fabulous. We like to get the messaging out, especially in February, because people are paying attention. You know, that is our month, and we find volunteers will sign on then. Also in the month of February, all local hospitals will be giving red knit hats to all babies born in the month of February to bring attention to the prevalence of cardiovascular heart defects as the leading birth defect. So if anyone knits and would like to get involved making adorable red hats for distribution, you can reach out to me at the local office.
What's your contact information and website?
Sure. So if you go to heart.org and search for the Hudson Valley, that'll be the easiest way to find our website. And I am Kristin, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, .Horowitz at heart.org. And I would love to hear from you.
Well, terrific. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and this is a great topic. And we thank you for your work and the work that your colleagues do.
Thank you.
Really trying to meet this challenge head on. And thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Please tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and your community healthy and strong.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.